Hello everyone, and welcome to our second episode of the EU4 and UK COVID-19 quarterly podcast series. My name is Natalie Harb, and I am the Practice Lead for Performance Management in IQVIA. And today I am joined by my colleague Sarah Rickwood, the Vice President of Thought Leadership and Marketing in EMEA. In today's podcast, which is titled Impact of the Pandemic on Pharma Launches, we will be exploring in details how launches performed in 2020. Last year, as we might all agree, was a challenging year for our industry. As the world came to a standstill at the start of last year and countries went into complete lockdown, we saw dynamics change within the industry. For example, face-to-face interactions between pharma companies and physicians nearly came to a halt at the start of last year, and customer engagement became wholly remote. There was also a significant reduction for in-person visits to physicians, surgeries, and hospitals. Sarah, thank you for joining us today. To get us started, can you please tell us what made 2020 a challenging year for the launch environment?
Thank you very much, Natalie, and I'm very happy to be joining you on this podcast. Well, clearly, 2020 was an extremely challenging year and very different across practically all aspects of our day-to-day lives, as well as healthcare provision and the pharmaceutical industry. But there was a particular challenge for launch products because prescription medicine launches build up their presence and their use through new prescriptions of either newly diagnosed patients or patients who are on an existing medication and get switched to a better medication if they're not actually achieving their treatment goals. So it's this dynamic part of the market that launch products need in order to be able to enter the market and to grow. The challenge is that for the most part, whilst doctors reported that they didn't change their willingness to prescribe new products during 2020, and in fact, for the most part, new launches were coming into the market, they were still being approved, they were still making it into the market, companies were still deciding to launch their products, and market access was, with some exceptions, still working. The fact is the doctors reported that they were still only, for the most part, willing to prescribe products they'd actually seen the patient face-to-face. And of course, if, as you noted, at the beginning of the pandemic, suddenly during the first lockdown, doctors were, for the most part, not seeing patients face-to-face, unless there was a really good reason to do so, the opportunity to prescribe new launches was therefore very severely reduced. In fact, in the US, we estimate that 1.01 billion fewer diagnosis visits to healthcare professionals were made in 2020 relative to 2019. That's a drop of 21%. And it will vary across the EU4 plus UK, but the fact of the matter is that drop in diagnosis visits will have been seen across countries and across therapy areas and conditions as well.
Thank you. Given the challenges that you've just outlined, did any kind of launch perform? And if yes, and I'm hoping, and I know that some launches did perform, what kind of launches were they?
Well, it's interesting. We divided the market into three types of prescription medicine launch. And these are all new active substance innovations. So they're genuinely novel products. We had a cohort that was primary care products, so generally prescribed by general practitioners, specialty products that were not orphan. So these will be prescribed by specialists in various conditions. And then orphan products, which are almost exclusively specialty products as well, but obviously are specifically for very, very rare conditions. And what we did was we took the first 6 months of sales for those products in the EU4 plus UK for the launches that actually first came into the market in 2020. And we compared those first 6 months for each of those cohorts with the first 6 months of the same cohort, i.e. primary, specialty non-orphan or orphan, in the pre-pandemic era. So we were comparing how they did in that first 6 months against a pre-pandemic benchmark. And the fact of the matter is, for primary care products and specialty non-orphan products, there were very few instances where there was outperformance versus the pre-pandemic benchmark. And almost without exception, I'll come to the exceptions in a second, 2020 launches in their first 6 months were underperforming the pre-pandemic benchmark. Now, there were no exceptions to this in the EU4 plus UK for primary care. The only exceptions we saw globally were actually in the US. And in the case of specialty non-orphan products, the only exception in the EU4 plus UK was actually in the UK, and that was driven by special circumstances. Of course, as well as the COVID vaccines, there were some COVID treatments that came into the market, and we classify those as specialty products. And the UK, because it saw the early launch of Veklury, which is a COVID treatment, we managed to capture the first 6 months of that COVID treatment sales. And unsurprisingly, it did very, very well in its first 6 months, as was to be expected. And probably it will have done very well in the other countries as well. It just is that we didn't capture the full first 6 months. So again, the picture for the non-COVID specialty launches that weren't orphans is that there was underperformance compared to the pre-pandemic benchmark in that first 6 months. Now we come to the orphan products. So these are products that are for very rare diseases. And there we saw quite a bit of resilience, actually. We saw for some countries, and in the EU4 plus UK, it's Germany and Spain, that the orphans which came into those markets during 2020 actually outperformed the first 6 months of the pre-pandemic benchmark. And if we look at the UK, Italy and France, they're either close to or just slightly below the pre-pandemic benchmark in terms of that first 6 months performance.
Why were orphan medicines so resilient? Is there any learning that our listeners can take from these launches and apply forward elsewhere in other areas?
So it's an interesting question. Clearly, orphan medicines tend to be addressing very high unmet need conditions, even though the number of patients is very small. In some cases, of course, orphan medicines can be the first ever pharmacotherapy that has been available to treat a given condition. And there was an example of that type of product in the US, a product called Tepezza, which was the first ever pharmacotherapy to treat thyroid eye disease. So there's quite a lot of motivation within healthcare systems to get these products to patients, even in the challenging time of the pandemic, because these products are addressing very high levels of unmet need. But I think it's more than that as well, because actually for orphan medicines, often a pipeline of patients waiting for the product to be approved and to become available has been built up in the years before the product's launch. And that was particularly the case with certain orphan medicines that came in 2020. Obviously, the issue is that pipeline of patients that was built up pre-pandemic in 2019 or possibly even earlier. And therefore, the orphan medicines that are being developed now to come to market either in 2021 or later may see greater challenge in that respect. But I think also another learning that can be taken from the orphan medicine sphere and applied elsewhere is whether companies managed to pivot to digital well or actually were unprepared and slow to do so. We all know that digital channels of communication to healthcare professionals have become an extremely important part of bringing products into market. And in fact, in previous white papers, IQVIA has shown that the most commercially successful launches pre-pandemic were already the launches with the highest volume share of digital promotional activity in the first year of their launch. But what we saw during the pandemic was that launches that were resilient were launches that made the pivot to digital rapidly and effectively. And they did that because they had already prepared for digital to be an important part of their launch. And of course, that can be the case for any kind of product. If I take the patient pipeline, whilst in non-orphan areas, we may not see that significant buildup of patients waiting in exactly the same way as we do in rare diseases. Nevertheless, preparing the market for your product effectively so that patients and doctors are prepared and waiting for your product's approval and introduction is something that can be built into effective pre-launch preparation for any product.
What's the prognosis for the 2020 launches which failed to reach their potential?
This is something we're looking at extremely closely at the moment. And the reason why we're doing that is because of the work that we have done in our launch excellence studies since 2007. Over the course of seven launch excellence white papers, the most recent one, of course, published just a couple of months ago in early June, we've seen a phenomenon that we call the six-month window. And what the six-month window says is that that first period of time on the market, and it can even be before market access is properly granted, but the product is in the market being commercially sold, is a disproportionately important time in terms of its influence on the product's life out to 2 years, certainly, and even beyond them. In fact, what we've seen almost without exception across all of the studies that we have done is that 80% of the launches in a given cohort start in their first 6 months and continue after that on the trajectory that was set in that first 6 months, which is great if you have an extremely strong trajectory and pretty challenging if you don't. Now, there's 20% of launches that start on a fairly low uptake trajectory in the first 6 months and then make a substantial improvement. So the message is that you can change your fate, but the challenge in the message is that it's only a minority of products which do that. Now let's turn to 2020. I've already told you that with the exception of orphan medicines, which were resilient, for the majority of cases, specialty non-orphans and primary care launches that came into the market in 2020 did worse in their first 6 months than the pre-pandemic benchmark for that type of launch in that country. So it is a really big question exactly how they are going to recover the potential that they do have if they've had a relatively challenging first 6 months. So past precedent says it is possible. We have seen some excellent launches that actually had a fairly challenging first 6 months, but then became excellent after that time. What's required, I think, is continued focus on the right kind of engagement and investment with healthcare professionals. And I would add a continued development of evidence, real world and clinical around the product and the communication of that and the value to the client, to the payers and to the stakeholders going forward.
I guess I still have one last question to end our podcast today. What should pharma companies preparing for launches do to optimize their potential going forward? I know you've touched around the digital aspect, but if we can end our podcast with that question, that would be really, really, really insightful.
Okay. So I think that the first point, and I'm pretty certain that all pharmaceutical companies grasp this very clearly now, is to recognise that we're not going back to 2019. We will see recovery in certain areas. For example, we will see a return to face-to-face engagement between pharmaceutical companies and doctors. But we're not going back to the environment we had in 2019 entirely. We have to prepare for a new environment. And we see three areas, we've called them pillars, of the post-pandemic launch excellence model, where we think that pharmaceutical companies need to evaluate their new changed environment, to research on it. They need to make new decisions about what they do and how they invest for their launches. And then obviously they need to execute effectively on those. And those three areas are the following. The first is about the changed patient journey, an altered patient treatment environment. We started out this podcast by talking about the fact that patients simply, in many cases, couldn't see doctors face to face during the first part of the pandemic. And whilst that's recovered, the fact of the matter is patients' journeys to effective diagnosis and treatment are not the same as they were in 2019 now. And the more complex a condition is, particularly if we think about conditions that are treated by specialists, the more challenging may be the route to effective diagnosis and treatment now. So if you have a launch product, you've got to understand how that patient journey has changed, because you can't make the assumption it's the same as you saw when you made plans in 2019. You need to think about the role and impact that that has on your launch product and how you can support patients and doctors in getting effective diagnosis and treatment. We've already talked about the fact that the commercial model has changed in the context of digital, and that's been really, really tangible. It's something that pharma has seen, and it's something that pharma can control the response to. But there's still a lot of work to be done to actually build a truly effective new commercial model, recognizing that whilst face-to-face will come back, we're not going back to 2019. And lastly, we've got to plan and invest around a really integrated evidence strategy. And the reason why we need to do that is because the pandemic's impacts on economies and therefore healthcare system spend are going to be one of the longest reaching issues impacting the pharmaceutical industry as far as the pandemic is concerned. Healthcare budgets are stressed. They will be even more stressed. Medicines budgets will be stressed, and payers will have to make choices. And the basis on which they will make choices is the evidence they see about the value of one product versus another. In that kind of environment, investment in real-world evidence is not something to dial down on. It's something that you actually need to dial up on. And we will look into this more in a second podcast.
On behalf of all our listeners, I want to say a big thank you, Sarah, for your time today and for sharing your perspective on the impact of the pandemic on launches. With that, we conclude today's podcast. We hope that you found our discussion of interest, and we look forward to welcoming you back very soon. This was the second in our quarterly series of podcasts that focus on the impact of COVID-19 on European pharmaceutical markets. Be sure to look out for the third podcast in this series, in which Sarah will be joining me again to discuss, as she just mentioned, the three pillars to address for post-pandemic launch and commercial model. In the meantime, do visit our COVID-19 resource page on IQVIA.com for more information, or contact us directly at EU5COVIDReport@IQVIA.com.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this and other topics facing healthcare ecosystems around the world, visit IQVIA.com.